Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Safe supply goes by all sorts of names. Decriminalizing. That's why they went with safe supply, because decriminalizing is a little harder to say, especially when you bit your tongue the night before. Quite literally. I'm so glad you're with us on this Saturday, this 4th of May. There's a lot to talk about, a lot going on in this country, and the issue of safe supply of drugs is one that is not just affecting British Columbia. BC's getting the headlines, a lot of the headlines, but it's affecting other provinces in Canada, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Ontario, and so on. And we're about to speak to the president of the Canadian Police Association, Tom Stamatakis, who will join us from Vancouver. And a little later in the hour, we'll be speaking with Greg Sword, also of BC, Mr. Sword's 14-year-old daughter, Camila, overdosed and died on hydromorphone, a drug which, according to news reports, her friends had said they obtained from drug users who were defrauding Vancouver's Safer Drug Supply Program. It never occurred to anybody, I guess, that if you make drugs available, heroin, fentanyl, meth, that there could be some criminal activity that would follow fairly quickly. I guess. Tom Stamatakis is president of the Canadian Police Association. Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the time.
You're welcome.
Can you tell us, please, what this decriminalization and safer supply program is doing, how it's affecting police in British Columbia and across Canada? What are police officers encountering? What are you hearing?
Well, first of all, whatever side of this issue that you're on, if you create this kind of a public policy framework without building the capacity to support and manage not only people struggling with substance use issues, but all of the other related issues, it should be no surprise to anyone that it turns into an unmitigated disaster, which is what it's become in British Columbia. The fact is that our police officers are stuck in the middle. On the one hand, you've got, they're traumatized by having to interact with people who are struggling with substance use issues, often overdosing in front of their eyes, right across neighborhoods. So that's one issue. The other issue is they're in the middle of this, policy decision that it makes no sense, and residents and business owners that are saying, look, we need you to do something about this issue, about this person who's encamped in front of my business or encamped in front of the door in front of my apartment building. And on the other hand, they're being told by our elected officials, government, and policymakers that they can't do anything about it. So it's a really, really challenging situation, and it's created a lot of difficulty for our members.
Yeah, and it was obvious very quickly, wasn't it, Tom?
It was already an issue, particularly in a city like Vancouver, but in communities right across not only the province of British Columbia, but every province across this country. This pilot only had an exacerbating effect. You created this environment where simple possession was decriminalized without giving the police the tools to be able to manage the related issues, and without building the appropriate capacity in our communities to help support people who are struggling with substance use challenges, and again, all of the other people who are impacted from what effectively became a free-for-all, where you had people, I live in Vancouver, I would walk down the street and, someone would pass me by while they're you know, smoking whatever drug they're using in their pipe, or, you know, you couldn't go into places because people were, you know, in the entrenched hard living people were setting up, you know, anywhere and everywhere. And it seemed like no one could do anything about it.
What about young people? What about, teenagers, preteen children? Do you run into that?
Well, that's the most, you know, that's the saddest part of it is we're still losing people and we're still seeing people, including, you know, very young people who are irrevocably damaging their health and wellness through addiction. And it's ubiquitous now in, particularly in some of our larger cities, not just in British Columbia, but across the country. And it is, it has a wearing or traumatizing effect on first responders, on community members, because we're not building the kind of capacity we need to support and manage people struggling with substance use issues, whether it's through treatment and recovery, but whether it's through other supports where, you know, there is housing, where there is appropriate places for people to, whether it's to consume whatever in a way that's managed and has no negative effect on the rest of the community while they're getting supports so that they can, you know, maintain their health and do other things. We're in this series of decision-making where it's all about half measures as opposed to responding in a fulsome way where we can actually make a difference in what's a very serious issue in this country.
So what's your sense of what Premier Eby has said he wants to see happen? He wants to see police having, again, the option to interdict and act if drugs are used in a public venue and if illicit drugs are used in a public venue. But he says he's also going to continue with the 3-year decriminalization experiment. What's your reaction to what he had to say?
Yeah, I don't know what that looks like. I'm pleased that the premier is responding to the feedback that he's been getting from the public and from police and other individuals and groups in the community. This is long overdue. What it's going to look like, I haven't seen anything yet. The problem, though, is even if you go back to a model where you're criminalized, which is not something I'm advocating for, if you don't build the capacity in our institutions, for example, where there's some kind of a therapeutic component or again, the kind of programming that provides support to people who are struggling with addiction, training opportunities, you're not going to resolve anything. It's just, you know, even if we get back to incarcerating people, you're just incarcerating people and releasing them back into the same community only to engage in the same type of behavior. This has got to be, we need a significant investment in building capacity for treatment, counseling, programming, housing, all of the things that are necessary to get ahead of this. And we're not doing that in this province or as far as I can see anywhere else in the country. And relying on this notion of, first of all, I don't think there's such a thing as safe supply, but in relying on this notion that we're going to provide these harmful substances to people without creating the regulatory framework and policy framework around that, that allows it to be properly managed without undermining community safety and public safety, again, doesn't get you to any kind of a reasonable or positive outcome. Mm-hmm. And more troubling is, you know, set aside the impact on the community. What about people who are addicted? What about their families and what they have to endure when they lose a loved one or when they have to deal with a family member who's now irrevocably unwell because of the implications of using very harmful substances in an uncontrolled environment.
Yeah. And fair to say that crime is present at supervised consumption sites as well. Would you
I
say?
I can show you examples of supervised consumption sites across the city of Vancouver and in other cities where they exist, where they're not properly supported and the disorder that happens around those sites is obvious. You don't need to do a research project. You don't need to study the data. It's obvious. The stolen property, the the refuse, the garbage, the discarded items, the human urine and feces. This is not the solution. If you're going to create supervised consumption sites, then you need to commit the resources to properly manage them so that it's better and safer for those persons with an addiction that are using those sites, but also for the surrounding community, the businesses that are trying to operate their businesses, the residents that are trying to leave and come back to their homes without being fearful that they're going to be accosted or somehow negatively impacted by what's going on in their neighborhood. That has to change.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.